Hi, you're listening to Nuts and Bolts, a podcast about gear and music. With some of your favorite artists, I will dive into the practicalities of how they make their work. Twisting those knobs and pushing those buttons.
Oh, ooh. Yeah. There it is.
Intended.
Yeah.
Last month I visited Stockholm. At Edition Festival, I heard amazing artists such as Andrea Lockwood, Anthony Braxton, and Sarah Hennies. I visited the iconic EMS Center, the Electronic Music Studio, to scour their library for books about electronic music pioneer Elsa Maria Pade. And last but not least, I had the pleasure of chatting with Swedish composer Maria V. Horn, or Maria W. Horn. Horn has released, amongst others, the cassette Excitation, Frustration, Excitation, and the EP Magenta. Other projects include an audiovisual piece of synchronized sound and lights, a string-corded piece inspired by black metal, and a performance about and around a Tesla coil. Contrapoétique, her most recent release, researches the history of witch burnings in Horn's hometown, Ångermanland. Like Magenta, this record is released on a self-run label.
It's a label called Ex Cathedral that I'm running together with Kali Malone. And we started it maybe 4 or 5 years ago, mainly because we felt like there's a need in Stockholm for a label or organizer that put focus on this type of music, because we have so many talented composers and musicians here. We started super simply with just like doing our own cassettes and like printing our own artwork and setting up concerts at Fylkingen to do like releases for the tapes. And it's been growing every year. Recently we started doing vinyls as well, Contrapoétique was our second vinyl that we put out. So it's growing organically somehow.
We turn our attention to gear.
I started composing, must be 15 years ago now, on computers mainly. So starting off in all these types of linear environments like Logic and Pro Tools and Reaper, where you sort of place sounds along a timeline and build compositions using that way of thinking.
DAWs, as you may remember from season one, are software programs primarily geared towards recording music.
Gradually, the last couple of years, I've become more and more interested in music programming and also ways of working that involves a less linear type of process, such as if you're working with a modular synthesizer, you're making a patch and it's running on its on its own. So, but this approach I've been mainly using with music programming, such as SuperCollider, where you can create a patch and define like parameters of a synth, and then you can sort of start it and it's running by itself. And I think this is, for me, it has a different quality of working like with generative processes.
Check out last month's episode for some info on patching and the program MaxMSP, the visually oriented equivalent to SuperCollider, one might say.
It's easier for me, like initially, to work with a graphical interface because it has like boxes that has a meaning, and you sort of patch the boxes. It's more towards like working with pedals or things like that. Whereas SuperCollider, it works in the same way, but you're dealing with words and code instead of the boxes. But it's still, I mean, it's still object-oriented. When you start working with a text-based programming language, this is also a part of the learning process to start seeing like, okay, these are the objects and they're connected in this way. Because you're so used to read a text from the beginning to the end. But in a way, there's also a running order that goes from the top to the bottom in this particular code.
SuperCollider is an open source music programming language and environment which was originally released in 1996 by James McCartney, not to be confused with Paul McCartney's son by the same name. SuperCollider itself is pure code, but users have since created various graphical interfaces that can be used in the program.
In bigger cities, there are platforms that are for music programming and learning SuperCollider that are not connected to universities. But for me, I got in contact with it when I started studying electroacoustic composition here in Stockholm. It was like a mind-blown kind of thing just to start trying it out, being super confused in the beginning, and then just realizing but just a few lines of code, you could actually generate a quite complex and intricate synthesizer. Or I guess the fascination with also having people around me that was interested and being part of like a community that were interested in developing this and learning from each other. I think it's also interesting that with music programming in general, you can fail really like way more than you can fail just like using Ableton Live, for instance. And you can come across these failures that are really interesting, actually. So, and I think that also caught my interest. So if I'm using this, I have to know a lot about how music actually works and how synthesis works from ground level, sort of. But while learning, I'm failing. But these failures create interesting results that can also be used. Like one of my first release called Diverted Units, it's based on very much of those failures that turned out interesting. We'll be right back. been trying to learn Superglider for the last 5, 6, 7 years, and I still feel like a beginner. But I guess I know enough to be able to use it as a source, like to build synthesizers to use as source, and then I might use the source materials in other ways, such as like importing them into a sequencer or like a linear type of environment.
Sequencing is a device or software that can store and play off sequences of some kind of sound, typically notes or beats. Someone who works a lot with synthesizer sequencing is, for example, the awesome Suzanne Ciani.
I'm using so many different programs and so many different methods and processes, and so it's really hard to quantize it down to, like, this is what I use. But I like to find out what's this specific tool or program good at, and then use it only for that. So it's a lot of, like, sourcing material from different programs, or processing material through like equipment or gear to add like different qualities to it. For instance, in my last record, Contrapoetique, I did a lot of reamping just to get other materialities or sort of like qualities to a fixed sound, or using like tape machines to add like this more analog qualities to it.
When you reamp or process sound, you take a signal you've recorded and you run it through something that influences the character of that sound. And then you record the result of that. More examples of this will pass by later in the episode.
But I can be really jealous of people that sort of find their thing and their tool and their method, and they can work with that specific setup for years. It's like I would love to feel that way about a particular setup, but until I find that, or maybe I never do, I'll continue to just try out new settings, because also in a sense that's when I find the most interesting things, is in combining methods that might be very different or have connotations that are from different worlds, for instance. Like to use reductionist and minimalist compositional ways of working that might have connotations towards more of an academic world, but to use, like, for instance, this feedback machine might, if you hear it, have connotations towards a noise scene. And I think that's also where the interest happens for me, like to be able to use tools that have these a big variety of connotations.
Den erkänner inte gränsen.
There are some interesting looking boxes on Maria's desk, which you can see on the Nuts and Bolts Instagram page.
These are processing units. They don't create a sound in themselves, but this one, it is an old graphic equalizer, but it's rebuilt by a friend of mine to be a feedback unit. Right now it's plugged into a delay pedal, so you can sort of create the various amounts of feedback. You can control the feedback with this parametric grid of sliders. So you can easily like add chaotic elements to any kind of material. So I'm using this live a lot.
I ask her about the controls on the box.
These are just the frequencies. So I can really control the frequencies and where the feedback will happen. But still, it's hard to know exactly how it will affect the sound, because there are filters and stuff. So it's a sort of unstability device, in a way.
Chaos
device. It's called the Trashophonium, and it's built by Jonathan Liljedahl.
Here comes a demonstration of the Super Collider patch combined with the feedback and the delay pedals.
Shall I play some sound from one of these patches?
Yeah.
On the Super Collider, so we have a source. Mm-hmm. So this patch is a phase modulation synth. So it's like a very simple synthesizer. Written out here are the parameters that I can control. This is a minor scale, and I can control the type of notes it plays, like the notes in the scale, for instance, and the octaves and durations, feedback amount, phase modulation amount, low pass frequency, and also the attack sustain and decay and the panoration of it. So it's like, it's written out quite easily. Once you start seeing like these are the parameters that I can easily change.
I notice Maria has the same little mixer that I have. It's the 802 VLZ4 Mackie. Affordable and transportable, it's a good option for live playing if you can make do with one aux.
Yeah, I like the Mackie mixers. Let me check. Show server meters. Okay. So we should have a sound out.
Oh.
Ooh. Yeah. There it is. Okay, so it... So this is a quite... So the interesting thing, I think, in building a patch, working with a patch like this, is that you can define the parameters, but when I play this, it will never sound exactly the same, like, unless I would record this. But it's like a constant variation, because it has... many parameters of randomness built in.
So now we're also hearing the feedback device.
I'm adding some of the feedback to here.
Thank you. What is your like routing here? You have both a direct and through the boxes, or?
So I have the, this is the aux, and it goes into the feedback machine, and the feedback machine do like an extra loop through the pedal here, but I also have the direct out from the loop pedal, plus the output from the feedback machine. So it's it has some different qualities to it.
Because then on the mixer, you're basically layering those three, and you can kind of vary those. Yeah. Degrees.
Yeah, for sure. And I can, I'm pointing at a knob here. This is the overall amount of feedback. So if I put that down, I would only have the output from the delay pedal, for instance. So it has a lot of variation possibilities to it.
Routing is similar to patching. It indicates how different parts or machines are connected to each other, what is sent where. This has a lot to say about what kind of sound you get at the other end. It might mean the difference between getting any sound or no sound at all. Contrary to physical ones, finding the digital cable that is wrongly plugged can be quite tricky. And I like also that the delay pedal has like no text on it. Maybe I can take a picture of it later.
Yeah, sure. But I think this also connects to an interesting aspect when it comes to gear. Working with Super Collider, it's political in a sense as well to use open source programming tools that are free for anyone to use, such as Super Collider. And I guess this is a silly aspect of this, because this is like a commercial pedal that I bought. I just did a complete makeover where I just took away all the knobs and took away the branded logo and everything. I think it's a reaction to what the like electronic music world is becoming more and more, which is like a very much branded world where you can have a whole career as an artist if you choose to play a certain like Moog instrument and be like a cover person for a brand, for instance. Or if you choose to buy these expensive modular synthesizers, they are so like heavily fetishized. In a sense, it almost becomes ridiculous. It's so much about fetishizing gear and like contributing to this world of selling products. And I want to somehow try to be a counterpoint towards that.
No pun intended.
Yeah. I mean, of course, I'm sitting here with a Mac computer and a Mac mixer. I mean, it's hard to be strict in this sense, but in a way, I think if I'm gonna like promote gears, then I might as well like talk about this, which is like a communal project. It's like anyone can contribute to building this program, and anyone can take part of it. It's like there's a whole community of people teaching each other. It has values that are easier for me to connect to.
Discussing the time Maria spent working at the Electronic Music Studio, EMS, in Stockholm, while working on Contrapoetique, we get back to the subject of reamping.
When I was working at EMS, the Electronic Music Studios here in Stockholm, and they have this huge plate, a metal plate, that you can connect a loudspeaker and transmitter to and sort of run material through it, which makes it sound so interesting and like completely changes the whole qualities of the sounds. That sort of started my fascination with reamping as a method. I think I continued from there and used a lot of the tape machines they have there as well, and just experimenting with the overdrive and overdriving the signal in to create this tape distortion. Specifically on one of the tracks, it's only that sound of tape distortion. I can play it. Fides Minus track. You hear this specific type of distortion. It's very much the sound of just overdriven tape machines. We'll be right back.
EMS offers the possibility for musicians to come work for free with amazing synthesizers and other machinery that they would otherwise never have access to. Surge and Buchla are two iconic brands of modular synthesizers that EMS has impressive specimens of. Did I read correctly that you also worked with the Buchla or Buchlas at EMS?
Yes, I did, for specifically for one of the songs called Ångermanländska bilder. It was also the commission from a local museum in my hometown, Härnösand. So it was a composition that I made based on archival, like Super 8 materials. And I somehow wanted to build on the atmosphere on these really old Super 8 films materials. So I felt like using an analog synth like the Buchla would make sense. And it really did. It worked well to those pictures. But it's amazing that we have EMS and like we have access to these synthesizers and we can use them for free. Because, I mean, I could never afford a Buchla system. It's easy to really get lost in the Buchla. Like, we talked about patching, and you can really just create these gradual patches and you can just get lost listening to different settings of the Buchla, and it's like a eternal machine. For me, it was really hard to limit myself. Eventually, I sent some MIDI, like a really simple chord sequence, and then I built upon that and recorded a lot, and then sort of tried to limit myself to like an hour of material or something.
Thanks for listening to Nuts and Bolts. This episode was edited and mixed by yours truly, Jessica Slichter. Thanks to our guest, Maria W. Horn. Thanks to co-producer Anne-Gert Grimsbühl-Hoyer and to Bridget Farrell for sound technical advice. Thanks to Nupa and Fofo Gofo for supporting this episode of Nuts and Bolts. Find and follow us on social media and support us on patreon.com. Stay tuned for next month's episode, where I'll talk to Jaylen.